they have to really tighten the belt and cut their standard of living, or their retirement funds just might not last long enough. That's a scary thing. Passive investing in multifamily syndications and other types of other asset classes of commercial real estate, returns are not tied to the stock market. There's no correlation there. So it avoids that kind of volatility.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon. And today we've got Greg Butcher on the pod. He's the managing partner of Blue Sky Equity Partners. He is a real estate syndicator out of Southern California. Really interesting episode. He talks a lot about his journey in the military and then transitioning out of the military and kind of tying it in with his real estate journey, buying homes in the U.S. as he was deployed to different locations and then shifted over to the multifamily syndication world. We talk about his journey and kind of what asset classes he's going after and why he thinks now is still a very good time to invest. We spend a lot of time near the end of the episode on what he's doing and how he's helping veterans invest in real estate or get exposure to real estate investing. So really, really interesting episode, really cool guest. Let's get Greg on the pod. All right, Greg, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Justin. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. Maybe give the listeners a little bit of more of an overview of who you are, what Blue Sky Equity Partners is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a career as an officer in the Marine Corps for almost 20 years, retired in 2015, just as I was getting started in multifamily. I had dabbled in some single family home stuff when I was on active duty and never had figured out how to make it scalable. So that's when I found out about multifamily and about syndications, and the light came on. I'm like, hey, this is scalable. This is what I need to be doing. So I've been doing that ever since then. First, while I was still hustling, had a job, even though I had some retirement income coming in, I was still working as a contractor for the Marines for a while, all remotely. So it let me balance things out. And then after a while, I was able to leave that behind and strictly full-time syndicator now. And now I help veterans and patriots also, but largely veterans who are looking for passive income and ways to expand their income streams, work towards financial freedom, diversify from the stock market, help them be able to do that.
Very interesting. So there's obviously a lot to unpack there, but I guess starting out, so you were in the military for a while, and while you were active duty, you kind of started your real estate journey in single family, which is kind of a normal evolution, right? A lot of people typically dip their toe into the real estate market in something that they have some familiarity with, right? They're probably living in a single family house. They're like, hey, I can buy one and then rent it out for maybe more than the mortgage, and that'd be fun. I guess, you know, I'm always curious about people's kind of transition mentally to, I want to be a real estate investor. So at what point were you like, hey, I think I want to start my journey in single family? Like, how did that kind of transition happen? Because a lot of people, that real estate is not part of their investing financial acumen unless they grew up around it, kind of a thing.
Yeah, it started by pure accident, and I was kind of clueless. It's funny, I was just telling my brother the story early this morning on a hike. So I had gotten stationed in Bakersfield, California to run a reserve unit. The very first time I bought a house for myself, I knew absolutely nothing about real estate, didn't know what I was doing. I just felt like I was probably throwing money away on rent. And if I could own something and build equity for myself, that'd be a better way to do things. So I'd just come back from a deployment not long before that, and I had $4,000 in the bank, because most of them ever had the bank account at that point. You know,
there you go.
So, yeah, exactly. So there's no way in hell I could have bought a home except for the VA home loan, which is a great benefit the veterans have. So I bought a house myself for like 92 grand. And during that tour, I was there for 3 years. And a friend of mine gave me the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, to read, in which is what opened my eyes to other possibilities besides just working for your income, you know, as a W-2 or 1099 kind of employee. So I started getting the idea that, hey, when I will move duty stations, I'm going to buy a house to live in and live in it. And then when I move again, buy a new house at the new duty station and rent out the old one. And that way I can start building a portfolio of single family homes. I needed some seed money to start with. So I sold that house in Bakersfield when I left. And it was just the right, perfect time in the market in the run up before the 2008-2009 crash, where I sold it for well over 100% of what I bought for it.
Wow.
So yeah, sometimes it's better to be lucky than smart. So did that. And that was really what opened my eyes and got me going in the first place.
Interesting. So how many deployment or locations did you end up buying houses at?
Yeah, so I did two in Virginia right after that, and then in North Carolina. When I left North Carolina, I moved to Germany. So I obviously wasn't going to buy something there. I didn't know the real estate market there. I kind of put my search for new real estate on hold until I got back from Germany. In the meantime, not long after I got there, the market crashed. And I realized I just bought these two houses at the peak of the market. And there's this thing called a market cycle that I learned kind of the hard way, and they were underwater. But it's also how I learned the important lesson that as long as you're cash flowing, or at least close to cash flow neutral, and nothing in your loan forces you to sell, then just don't sell. Just hold out and wait for better times. And that's true whether it's single family, multifamily, any other type of commercial real estate.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market, right? So if you can hold on and weather the storm, and assuming that your renters are covering the cost of the mortgage and then some, like, you know, just hold it and wait for clear skies, essentially. So that's interesting. And I guess I'm curious a little bit about the property management of all of that. Like, had a handful of deals, and, you know, obviously you were deployed in Germany, so time zone differences, maybe the least of your worries. But I guess, how did you kind of manage those properties? Did you use third party, or how did that all work?
I did use third party because my job kept me pretty busy even when I wasn't deployed. And then when I was stationed overseas, forget about it. There's no way I was going to be able to manage the property myself. So I used third party management. It was hit or miss. You know, some they're good for a while, some they weren't good. The first one I had in my Virginia house, it took them 6 months before they could even rent the thing out because they were shooting for the stars on rent and they weren't realistic about it. So I had some mixed experiences, which is another reason I love multifamily, because we get much better, much more professional management services in apartments that are like 50, 60, 70 units and above.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I love that you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was kind of the light bulb moment for myself and my wife to kind of shift our thinking away from, oh, you've got to work for somebody else for the next 30, 40 years, invest in the 401k and hope that you've got enough money to retire, you know, at 65 or 70. And so it sounds like that book had a very big influence on your trajectory and path and mindset as well. Would you say that?
Yeah, it absolutely did. It was more of a mindset shift for me, the truth. I mean, I found like Cashflow Quadrant and a couple of the other books more informative, especially Cashflow Quadrant in terms of the ESGI quadrants and everything. And so more informational, but that first mindset shift with Rich Dad, Poor Dad is what got it all started for me.
No, that's awesome. So I want to kind of start to talk a little about your transition into the syndication world. But before we do that, I want to take a quick sponsor break. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to Justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right. We are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Greg Butcher on the other side of the pod. So we started out talking about kind of your military journey and buying a house in kind of every deployment location in the US, which is a brilliant strategy, by the way. I think that's super interesting because you're kind of getting paid to move, and then you can kind of like, you know, pick up a house and use the VA loan product that is available for y'all is super interesting. You mentioned it earlier, like scalability. That's usually the tipping point for people to move from single family to maybe even smaller multis or bigger multis like a syndication world. So how did you kind of get to that point where you're like, hey, this is great to own these houses across the US, but it's not going to really bring you the cash flow that you need to quit your job or bring you enough cash flow to really change the lifestyle? When did that shift go to, I need to go bigger?
Yeah. So after I left Germany, I was stationed in California and staying pretty busy. I'd gone to Afghanistan and stuff. And after that, really, I guess at the beginning of my last tour, I got the bug again, thought, okay, now I need to start trying to figure this out again, because my whole mentality was that when I retired, I didn't want to be in a position where I had to work for anyone else again. You know, I always thought that the secret to life is having a job you don't consider work. And I loved what I was doing in the Marine Corps. It was my calling, but it was a hell of a lot of work at the same time. And I didn't want to have to work that hard for somebody else after I retired. If I was working so hard for something for myself, something I was building for me and for my family, absolutely, all day long. But I wanted that to be a choice, not a necessity. So I was trying to figure out how to make single family more scalable. Just hadn't cracked the code on it yet. And now I was stationed in California. California real estate is more expensive. So I was trying to figure out how to make this work where I can own more properties and actually produce enough cash flow to work towards financial freedom, even combined with a military retirement after I retired from active duty.
Yeah.
And that's when I went to an REI expo and I saw someone who became becoming my first mentor in multifamily talk for about 45 minutes about multifamily and syndications. And I immediately recognized the scalability. What I didn't realize was until I heard him speak was that apartments and investing in apartments was an avenue that's available for me. I thought only like the ultra wealthy and corporations that own apartments. I had no idea that regular people like us can put our money together in a syndication and buy a big asset like that. So once I realized that, immediately saw the scalability and I knew that was the way forward for me.
Yeah, I think it's super powerful when you think about it. Like, you know, a lot of people start their journey in an apartment building, right? They live there as a young adult. And then obviously the evolution is you buy your own house and all that fun stuff. But you never think about, oh, I could have pulled money and purchased the apartment complex that I'm in and then live there, right? And I've never gotten that far mentally to figure out, oh, I can do that. But you may be living in an apartment building right now if you're listening to this, and you may know people or be connected to people that own that property, right? Maybe as a limited partner. And so I love that you can access this asset class as a quote unquote normal human being. You don't have to be a multimillionaire. You don't have to know the secret code or anything like that. You just have to, if you want to be passive, you got to have a little bit of cash that you can deploy into these assets. If you want to be active, you can pretty much start with no money and get in and find people that have the capital to take down these bigger deals. So let's talk about that first deal that you got into. Was it passive? Was it active? Like, what was the process? And talk about that first one, because it is a little bit jarring, nerve-wracking, whatever the term you want to use, when you got to wire that first, you know, 20, 50, 100 grand to a syndicator.
Yeah, absolutely. So I find the person who I heard speaking about multifamily syndications first had a mentorship program. So it took about a year and a half after I first heard him before I could go to his intro event where it was his intake to his program. But I did eventually get there as I was getting ready to retire, and I immediately signed up right there. Didn't do any research comparing one coach to a different coach or anything like that. I was like, nope, I'm doing this right now. So I got into that, and there was a series of classes, online course modules to go through to understand how to acquire an apartment building and how the underwriting works and all those different facets of it. But I wanted to also get my money to work right away because I was in the middle of retiring off active duty. There's a lot involved with that that I won't get into all the details of. Kind of difficult to get out of the military, believe it or not.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and then I was getting a first civilian job I'd had in almost 20 years, and I was moving back to the California coast from being out in the desert for my last duty station. So I knew it might take a little bit of time for me to get those course modules done. So I wanted to put some of my money to work immediately. So I invested in one of the first syndications that came across my computer screen there. The head of that mentoring program was actually on the general partnership team for. So I just kind of took a leap of faith and trusted that this is going to produce results for me, and invested about $30,000 in that deal and watched how it performed and looked at the financials and asked a bunch of questions while I kept on going through those course modules and learning more.
At what point was this? Like, what time frame are we looking at? When did you retire and when was this first kind of transition to multifamily?
Yeah, this is spring and summer of 2015. So this is, in hindsight, it's kind of the golden age of multifamily. I just didn't quite know it at the time. So,
yeah, I mean, that was definitely on the run up. If you bought something then and you held it for even, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, you probably made a decent, you know, chunk of change. So, and I think that's interesting because a lot of people, when they invest passively, they think that they have to be really behind the curtains. And if you find the right operator or right syndicator and you want to learn more, you know, most of them are very open to pulling back the curtain a little bit and helping to show you how the inner workings of a multifamily syndication general partnership group work, right? Especially if you want to eventually transition to being active, and whether it's finding deals or investor relations, raising capital, whatever you want to do. So it sounds like you had an interest in learning more, and that operator syndicator was open to giving you a little bit more time than maybe they would on a normal passive investor.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Justin. And that's what I always try to do with my investors too. The majority of my investors aren't trying to sponsor or invest actively, but there are some that do have that interest. And so I welcome them to dedicate some time. We can have some conversations and I can show you the inner workings of how this all works.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about the focus on and helping veterans. Before we get there, I want to talk a little about your first active deal. I shouldn't put that first, I guess, have you been on the active side? Have you been on kind of the, have you shifted over to active now? And also, at what point did you decide, hey, I'm going to focus on real estate full time and pull that plug?
Yeah. So it's been an active GP on several deals now. So about less than a year after I joined that program, so early 2016, that's when I was back in the San Diego area. I had a job, I settled in, and I'd gone through all those course modules. I was like, okay, now I need to start like getting my money's worth out of this program that I just bought, because it wasn't worth it just for passive investing, but definitely was for sponsoring. So I was like, okay, I need to be a general partner now. So living in San Diego was great, especially as a retired military officer and everything like that, but I'm just not going to invest in California. It's just not going to happen, you know, because one of my main criteria is to invest in a market that is landlord and business friendly. And while there are some parts of California that might make sense from a financial or market perspective, when it comes to that, the entire state's off limits for me. So Phoenix was about the closest market to me that made sense for me to focus on. I ended up partnering up with two guys who were in that same mentoring program from me. They were in Dallas. They had day jobs based in the IT industry. They had just closed their very first multifamily property in Norman, Oklahoma, which is coincidentally where I went to college. I grew up in Tulsa and went to University of Oklahoma. And so they had deal flow coming to them in Phoenix, but no ability to get out there and look at it. And I, meanwhile, this job that I had taken supporting the Marines as a contractor afterwards, it was all remote work and it was so hands-off at the time, it was almost criminal. As long as I got my work done on time, no one knew or cared or asked questions about where it was. So it was very easy for me to get out to Phoenix, spend a few days, look at properties and come back and participate with them that way and be the boots on the ground without actually living there. So I did that. I got very familiar with the Phoenix market. And after a few months of trying a few properties together, we got our first LOI accepted. We closed on it in 2016, October of that year. So that was a 120-unit C-class property, like mid-70s build in Glendale, the West Valley of Phoenix. So we held that for about 28 months, early of 2019. And we ended up beating our five-year performa in less than 2.5 years. So we were pretty happy. Yeah. Our passive investors were really happy. And that was a great, you know, first foray into syndicating.
Yeah, you got spoiled. Buying in 2016 and, you know, in Phoenix in 2016, participating in the run-up. If you would have held it till 2021, you probably would have tripled or quadrupled returns just because of how much things would have appreciated the next 2 years. But hey, you return metrics in 2 years instead of four or five. So, you know, that's awesome. Congrats on that. So up until this point, and maybe catch us up to where we are now, you're still living in Southern California. We talked about that a little bit offline. What's your tally up to right now? Like, what's your portfolio look like, both from a number of units perspective, but also markets that you're in?
Yeah, so I've done a total of 8 properties as a general partner, working on a 9th right now. It should have closed by the time this airs. And so the majority of them have been in Arizona, and that's where my deepest market knowledge is, in Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona. I'm actually in Tucson right now, making a visit to check in on a couple of my properties and take another look at this property I'm raising for right now. And I've also been a co-general partner or co-sponsor on a couple of deals in Houston, Texas. And my main team has gotten one in the Denver area also. And that was because of inside connection that one of my partners had. And then I have worked as a kind of a mentor to some newer investors on a property in Fort Worth, Texas as well.
Oh, got it. Yeah, I've got a deal in Fort Worth. Decent market for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I guess let's shift a little bit to the stuff that you're working on with veterans. And I think that's an amazing cause and opportunity. And obviously you've been a success story, if you will, or an example of what people could do if they want to get active, but also you can show your counterparts like, hey, if you want to, you're making good money in the military, you're going to have some type of retirement, assuming they stay in long enough, right? And then, but if you want to also then be able to use your income and generate passive income, like here's an avenue. So how did you start that process? And what does it look like now? If any veterans or folks that know veterans are listening to this, how do they like get involved? And what are the benefits maybe that you kind of outlined for the military folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got started working with veterans mainly because, you know, that's who I understand the best. That's where I came from. Yeah. It's my own background. So I like working with people who, I don't relate to corporate lawyers. I never was one. I don't have, you know, I never went to law school, but I have an MBA, but that's a totally different ball of wax. So as far as veterans go, I mean, this is obviously a great way to add multiple streams of income, help recession-proof their financial situation. Properties aren't recession-proof, but they are very recession-resistant. And in most people who have W-2 employment or 1099 employment, there's always a threat of a layoff, right? I was talking to a veteran just a few weeks ago who had just literally 2 days prior to us having a call, had found out he was getting laid off from his work. And like, this is exactly the kind of situation that we talk about, where having multiple income streams can come in handy from having passive investments like this and stuff. So that's one way. Another is some people just cringe at having all their money invested in the stock market, the volatility of it. When February to March of 2020, when COVID first hit, it dropped in value like roughly a third within 1 month. Now it came back, but that for anyone who is getting ready to retire right then, and no one knew how much it would come back. For anyone who is getting ready to retire right then, and the majority of their retirement is in the stock market, what were they thinking right then? They had to be scared to death that, hey, guess what? Maybe I can't retire now after all, but we also can't go to work because of COVID. I might have to work for several years longer before I can actually retire. What if people who were already retired, who suddenly saw that happen and were afraid that they might have to really tighten the belt and cut their standard of living, or that their retirement funds just might not last long enough? That's a scary thing. So obviously, passive investing in multifamily syndications and other asset classes of commercial real estate, the returns are not tied to the stock market. There's no correlation there. So it avoids that kind of volatility.
Yeah, no, I think the couple things you mentioned there, my whole career has been in recruiting, and I've worked for small and large corporate entities. And when people are like, oh, get a safe and secure job, you know, work for name any company out there. Unfortunately, you could be the best employee, but you're an expense on somebody in the finance world expense sheet. And if they need to cut costs, what's typically the biggest cost in companies? Employees. So I've seen a lot of really good employees, friends get laid off for no other reason than they are an expense item. So I think to your point, and that's one thing that really got me focused on building passive income streams and additional income streams, is the stability. And I talk a lot about building a financial foundation and having that foundation be something you can jump off of, whether you want to start a business or you want to invest more or whatever. At least you have that stability, and that's multiple income streams, you know, obviously having some type of cash nest eggs if for kind of your oh crap fund, if you will. So yeah, I think that's super important. And that's awesome that you're kind of teaching that to your veteran and active military colleagues. For
yeah,
sure.
And a lot of them, they have some interest in real estate. They've considered real estate before, but they just don't want to be a landlord. They don't want to put that kind of time into it. They have families, they have other stuff going on. They retired from the military, or they got out and they're in a new career now. And that's just not how they want to spend all their time. And so this gives them a chance to get those same benefits from investing commercial real estate without doing all the landlording work. So a lot of
When I tell people I'm in real estate, they're like, oh, I'd like to get into it, but I really don't want to deal with tenants. And I'm like, I don't deal with tenants. You know, I hire property managers for that, whether it's a duplex or a 200 unit apartment complex. Like, I don't deal with the day to day. Like, that's why you hire professionals, right? So
exactly. One other thing you might find interesting, and a lot of people do, is that a lot of veterans might qualify as accredited investors without even realizing it, even if they don't know it. Because
how does that work?
Yeah. So think about the 401k you've had at a past job when you had regular jobs and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. You get your 401k statement. You know whether you have any monthly income or not. Obviously, we're young enough where we don't have any income coming in from it yet, but we see what the plan balance is. We always have that balance. So when we're putting together a personal financial statement, our own personal balance sheet and income statement or P&L, we know what goes on the income section of the P&L, and we know what that asset value is, the total plan balance that we put on the balance sheet.
Yeah.
But for a military retirement, or also for veterans who are receiving disability pay from the Veterans Administration, from the VA, most folks are receiving some amount of VA benefits. And if we stay in longer, it tends to get higher.
Okay.
So those are both different streams of income. They're basically annuities, but we never see what a balance is on that. All we know is what the income is. We see what we get to put on the income statement, but we never have any clue what to put on the balance sheet. But that actually can affect our net worth. So
yeah.
I actually have a method that I've used successfully in the past with parallel markets to qualify as accredited myself. And I am accredited besides that, but I actually withhold some other stuff just so that I would not work. I would get a no if they didn't count that. And they did count this. So a way to calculate the present value of those annuity streams so that this could actually give a lot of veterans access to invest in types of projects that they wouldn't otherwise be able to invest in.
Right. That's super interesting. And that makes a lot of sense, because It is an annuity, and typically annuities have some type of end value or whatever. So that's super fascinating. And yeah, to the people that are unsure, accredited investors can invest in 506C with deals, which is means you can advertise. If you're not accredited, you can't invest in those. So that could be an interesting thing because you may not be making a ton of money, but you could be accredited if you want to get access to some of these deals. That's super fascinating. I've never heard that. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's definitely something that I'm sure you'd kind of shout from the rooftops, if you will. I guess you have a tool that you kind of use to calculate that, or how, if somebody maybe not making a bunch of money, they don't qualify as an accredited investor in the traditional sense, do they have to kind of work with you to kind of figure out that thing? Or do you have like a tool that they could just plug in their disability benefit and kind of crank out a number?
Yeah, it's a website. It's okay. Not something that I control, but it's a website called valueyourpension.com.
Oh, got it.
But I also have a little class I put together, a little 15-minute video on what numbers to put where and how it all works. So veterans can feel free to reach out to me and I can send that to them and help them out that way.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. So I'm kind of curious, we're recording this in kind of mid-late September 2023. The world is much different than when you got into the real estate investing world in 2015-16. What are you kind of seeing? And I guess a couple questions here. Let's start with the first one. Have you shifted your focus, whether that's markets, whether that's deal type, or whether that's kind of the return metrics that you're anticipating as you look at deals now versus deals that you looked at even 2 years ago when the market was red hot?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm definitely in deal quality. People talk about a flight to quality right now, and I guess I'm in that boat. I definitely raised my expectations as far as only looking for really 1980s and newer type products, where before I was looking 70s, even to look at some 60s. I did one 60s product with a chiller. I'll never do that again.
Yeah, depending on where that is, chillers, that can shut down your whole site for a while. And if that's in the summer, especially in Phoenix, if that's in Phoenix in the summer, that you're going to have a lot of nasty tenants.
Yeah, that's actually my Fort Worth property, but it gets darn hot there too. So that's exactly what happened a year ago. So yeah, not pleasant. So really looking at newer products, still I'm looking for value add. I don't think that Class A is where I want to be right now. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic on where the market is heading right now. I believe we are at near or at the peak in terms of where the Fed is going to take interest rates. And I think what my crystal ball is worth, which is not much, but just to tell you where I'm putting my money and where I believe right now, is that at some point in the next year, the rates will start dropping some. I don't think they'll go back to where they were before they started, of course, because that was insanely low. But I think they will decline some. And I think that will drive a new round of cap rate compression. So right now, I kind of see that we have the opportunity to buy at low, because those higher interest rates have, of course, driven the cap rates up some, and to be able to sell a little higher a few years later. So I'm cautiously optimistic on where this is going right now, but I think it's important to structure your debt right, of course, not be forced to sell, like I said earlier, about single family homes at an inopportune time.
Yeah, and I think the things that I'm looking at now as I'm looking at deals slowly and cautiously, because I think you're probably seeing just as much as I am, like there's some pain in the multifamily world right now, especially folks that got into deals with variable rate debt. Maybe they did or didn't buy a rate cap. Sometimes the rate cap was still high and you're still, you know, not being able to really service your debt. So there's a lot of distressed deals on the market or come out daily, it seems like. So I think you got to be cautious with those deals. They're not always distressed because of poor management. A lot of they could be distressed because of just the property is not going to perform. So yeah, but I do think there are a lot of opportunities that are out there. And I think there will be more kind of later this year, early next year, because there's a figure rolling around. There's like $1 trillion worth of commercial real estate, not all multifamily, but just all commercial real estate debt that's going to come due in the next 12 to 18 months. So unless you can refinance that or get that property up to a standard where you can then put it into a fixed rate debt program, you're going to be hurting. So I think there's opportunity, because it sounds like you're working on a deal now. Is that a distressed deal, or you don't need to give the full details, but I'm just kind of curious. I've seen also a lot of loan assumptions, people trying to get rid of deals that are bought 2019 with a really low interest rate. And they're like, hey, I just want to exit this because maybe they got to focus on something else. But yeah.
That's what I'm looking for the most right now. That's what interests me the most, is a loan assumption. I haven't found one of those yet. That's kind of a diamond in the rough when you do find one of those, for sure, where it makes sense. No, the deal I'm working on right now, actually, it was not an off-market deal. It was a listed deal, but it's not distressed. It's a great product, but the interesting part is the seller is an institutional owner, and they bought it as part of a 12-property portfolio over 1,800 doors, which is a significant segment in this market that I'm talking about here. And so, again, they got that at an insanely low basis back in 2015. So they've held it for over 8 years now.
Oh, wow.
And so that, yeah, they've got so much out of this. It's crazy. So that we were able to get it at a good price for the current market, which is a good like 20% below where peak pricing was 2 years ago. And there's a lot of value add meat on the bone also. So besides the hoping betting for the cap rate compression, I don't want to put my money on that alone. I do believe this was going to happen, but I still want to be able to force value add with good solid value add work. And there's a lot of potential in this property.
Yeah, and that's the other benefit of commercial real estate versus single family is you can improve operations, improve income, reduce expenses, and that value of that property goes up. It doesn't necessarily matter what your neighbor's doing. If they're operating a poor product, yours is going to sell for more versus single family, which you rely on comps, right? What your neighbors sell for and all that stuff. So
exactly.
That's the other reason why I think multifamily and commercial real estate in general is just more interesting because you can improve a product and command higher dollar amount. So I think that's interesting. What about markets? I know you said Phoenix is a big market that you like a lot. And obviously being and investing there and traveling there quite a bit from Southern California, are you looking at different markets or are you looking at maybe less markets than what you were just given the fly to quality or kind of drive to quality kind of focus?
I'm not personally looking at different markets, but I am looking at some potential partnerships where I could work with someone who has a focus on a different market and get into a different market that way potentially. But as far as the markets where I'm focused on right now, I mean, I still like Phoenix. Phoenix has taken a bit of a hit this past year with the interest rates going up. The rent growth has gone negative for a couple of quarters. But after a year plus of like 27% rent growth in 1 year, to have it go negative 4% in 1 year for just for a short period of that time is not a big shock to me. Long term, there's so many new companies moving into the area. There's so much population growth. There's so much economic activity going on there. I'm a big believer in that market. So I love that one. Tucson, I really like too. It's a much smaller market than Phoenix is. It avoids some of the volatility of Phoenix. It hasn't gone at negative rent growth like Phoenix is temporarily right now. Just slowed down to more modest, more typical positive numbers. So the only issue with Tucson is a much smaller market. So there's just not a lot of deal flow right now, especially right now, while not many deals are being sold anywhere, the deal flow is kind of hard to find here.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I think it's a product of kind of where we are. I think some people are just holding on and trying to ride this out as long as they possibly can before they list. We'll see. I saw a big, massive portfolio get listed this morning up in Dallas. So there's more kind of blood in the water, if you will. So I think it's going to be interesting.
I love Texas deals too, but frankly, there's a big thing going for Arizona that I like over Texas. And that's property taxes are not reassessed based on sales price, and they are capped at 5% annual growth by law. So you know what it's going to be. It cannot surprise you. You can underwrite for it, and that's the end of the day. And then insurance. I can still insure a property in Arizona for $200 to $300 per unit per year, where that's a good like $1,000 in DFW right now, a lot higher than that down in Houston. So those non-controllable expenses are much more predictable here in Arizona than they are in Texas. Unless we operate a property at like a 35% expense to income ratio as opposed to 50 to 60% expense to income ratio.
That's interesting. I'm invested in a deal in Scottsdale. We closed it late this year. I think it was late last year, actually. And yeah, I had heard about the tax kind of limit, if you will, in the increase, but that's super interesting. And to your point, like sometimes these expenses, like there's deals in Florida that their insurance went up 2x, 3x.
Exactly. And
it's not like you can just say, I don't want insurance. Like you got to have insurance, right? So that's a cost that can wipe out your cash flow with nothing that you've done, right? You have not operated the property incorrectly. It's just your insurance goes up because of hurricanes and whatever happens in that area. So
I look at it as a degree of lower operational risk because of that here. So
that's right. Yeah. And I guess I'm curious about, are you focused on kind of, you know, there's a lot of parts of multifamily investing that you can get involved in as a general partner. Are you a deal finder? Are you more on the capital raising side? All the above? Like, where do you kind of land on all that?
Yeah, I've kind of been all of the above. So I've worked with a series of different partners on a deal-by-deal basis. Yeah. I do have a couple of partners I've done multiple deals together with, but we haven't formed a permanent long-term brand. Yeah. So definitely work hard, a lot on the asset management side. I do have a lot of broker relationships and work on the acquisition side in that way. I can underwrite, although that's not like the funnest thing for me to do personally. So I can fit a number of different roles on a GP team.
Got it. Yep. Got it. Fair enough. No, this has been a very awesome conversation, and I really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you for your service, and thanks for kind of what you're doing for veterans and helping them kind of get exposure. At the very least, you're giving them exposure to an asset class they may not have heard about. So kind of as we kind of round this thing out, I want to kind of finish the way I finish every episode with a 3-pack of questions that I ask every guest. So first question is, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate journey?
Yeah, I'd say take action, get started. Don't wait to buy real estate and wait. I truly believe in that. It is possible to make money in any market. So you just have to be a little bit more careful when the market's down, but there are good ways to do that. And having good mentors will help you find that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the mentor thing you talked about earlier, I know we didn't touch on it too much, but I think this is a team sport, multifamily syndication.
Definitely.
And having the right partners, having the right mentors, letting them have already stumbled upon a pothole so that you can kind of avoid them, right, is super important and helps you scale faster. So yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. All right. Second question is, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Right now, I'm reading the book Traction. I'd love to be able to tell you who the author is. I just can't remember it off the top of my head.
I think I've listened to that. I can't remember who the author is either, but I feel like I've listened to that book.
Yeah, about the entrepreneurial operating system. And I think I'm a big believer in systems and teams, yeah, having good systems in place. I really like the concept of the entrepreneurial operating system.
Which one are you? Are you the visionary or the integrator?
I would have to say I'm more the integrator.
Yeah. I actually worked with a company on my recruiting side, and they had just implemented the EOS, and I was working with the two founders, and they were like, we need an integrator. We're both visionaries. Like, we can't, yeah, do the day-to-day. We need an integrator. We need someone that's operationally focused that takes that my idea and says, I'll figure out, and then we'll rock and roll. So I feel like I'm the more the visionary mindset. Like, I like to think about things to do. I don't like to actually, mm-hmm, do them. So maybe we can work on something together. If you're the integrator and I'm a visionary, we can figure that out.
Sounds great, Justin.
Awesome. Last question here. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life off of just the passive income from your real estate investments, what would you do?
Yeah. So on a selfish note, I'd say I'd spend a little more time with my hobbies and everything like that, do a little more traveling, riding my motorcycle, skydiving, hiking. But also on the other side of things, I'd say I would spend a lot of time working towards ways to help increase financial literacy in our communities, or at least the community I'm in. If there's ways to do that on a broader scale, I would love to do that. And I think the lack of financial literacy in our society is one of the real social ills that we need to cure. So
yeah, you go through school and you learn about social studies and geography and all this stuff, but you don't really learn about how to balance your budget and what you should be looking at your income versus expenses and just personal finance, not even like real estate stuff, just like personal basic stuff can definitely help people kind of start their life a little bit better path as opposed to going into massive debt. So
exactly. I try to teach my daughter that, but a lot of kids don't have parents that have any kind of idea about that. So where are they going to learn, yeah, those things from? So
I grew up dual income, hardworking family, and I did not learn about real estate investing in that family. I was taught the good job, buy a house, retire, 401k, all that fun stuff. But the one thing my dad teach me was budgeting. And, yep, you know, so I still budget today, even though I don't necessarily have to as much as I did as a younger man. And that was a very, very helpful tool to saving money. It also gives me a little bit of a hoarding cash mindset sometimes, especially in some of these downturns, as opposed to like, okay, I need to invest now. But yeah, the budgeting piece is just super helpful because not a lot of people get that education. So awesome. Greg, man, it's been really cool to connect with you today. How can people reach out to you if they are a veteran and want to learn more about becoming accredited without actually being accredited in a normal sense? Or if people are listening and they want to just learn more about what you're doing and maybe look at some deals with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So for folks who are just getting started and trying to learn about how some of this stuff works, I have a short webinar called How to Recession-Proof Your Retirement with Hands-Off Commercial Real Estate Investing that might be of interest to people. They can find that on my website. There'll be a little pop-up there. My website is blueskye, it's blusky-equity.com. If they script spelling and put the E in blue, it doesn't matter. It'll redirect to the right place. So if they sign up for that webinar, it'll also prompt them to be able to schedule a meeting with me. And people who, you know, are further advanced in that but just want to meet with me, they can find me there too and love to talk to anybody.
Awesome. Very cool. Greg, man, really appreciate the time. It's great to connect with you for sure.
Great being on the show, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.